Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, we spend so much time in the office, late nights, and even weekends. There's never enough time at home with family and friends, right? Well, there is a way to strike a balance. Get your work done and spend more time at home with GoToMyPC. With just a click, you could instantly access your office computer from any internet connection. GoToMyPC, brought to you by Citrix, is the easiest remote access service available. Improve your work life and really create some balance with GoToMyPC. And in fact, you can try it free for 30 days. For this special offer, you have to visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free trial. Well, hello and welcome to episode number 95. Andrew Horowitz here, your host, it seems, for this wonderful thing we do here called the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I speak for myself, hopefully, maybe you too, but I do think it's a wonderful thing. We've been having a lot of fun doing this for some time, and thank you so much, of course, for your emails and your kind words. We got just a tremendous number of emails recently for me to bring back someone who has been on the show a few times. His name is Fausto Puglisi, one of the original day traders. He's a coach. He's a teacher. He's a very impressive guy. I've taken all his classes, actually. He's from Cyber Trading University. He's the founder of that. And I thought that would be kind of interesting during a time when we're seeing so much volatility and opportunity to make money in the art and the science of day trading. And to get it right, it's important, because if you don't, it can be a disaster. You know that. I think now more than ever, a lot of people have been more inclined to take a look at this as a way to invest rather than many of the other ways that they've seen. It could be any other way, whether it's swing trading or buy and hold or mutual funds or ETFs. But the art and the tactic of day trading, the way that he teaches it, is much different than probably you've seen before when you're dealing with level two and market makers and understanding traps and very interesting stuff. So what I thought we'd do would bring him back, and we'll get to him in a minute. And I thought I'd talk to you about a couple different things that are going on right now, and give you an opportunity to spend some time and soak up some of this day trading things in this episode. So first of all, just to kind of tell you, I was at the Money Show this week. Really interesting time. There was it was a lot busier than I anticipated. I had heard that, generally speaking, attendance was down, and that there was a bit of a different feel in the air. But I got to tell you, it was charged. There was a lot of electricity there and a lot of good spirit and people looking for opportunity. So I can't listen to everything you hear, I guess, all the time. But I did a bunch of videos. They'll be on the moneyshow.com and MSN Network shortly. And also had an opportunity to spend some time with John Markman and talk strategy, and actually drove back with him from Orlando to Fort Lauderdale. So I had a good time discussing some very interesting things with him in terms of the outlook. Also had the opportunity to have lunch with Harry Dent and talked about his new book, The Great Depression Ahead, but also talked about some of the intricacies of the bailout, talked about his thought process on the comparison of the U.S. and Japan, the Japan of the 1980s and the U.S. of course, the 2000s, and seeing if there was any kind of correlation there to see how, in fact, this rescue attempt, this bailout by our government, will not only help the banks, but us in terms of stimulus. But he wasn't very positive. It was almost, I guess the commentary was that we're currently riding a freight train that really just can't be stopped. And unfortunately, we are where we are right now. And while some of the stimulus may maybe hasten some of the pain, or slow it down, I should say, the pain will be there in the future, no matter how you slice it, because of all the cumulative effects of what's happened over the last number of years. I also sat in a few sessions. That was interesting. There was a couple of things I found kind of really, there was a theme throughout the entire Money Show. Every single class I went into, or panel, or anything I heard throughout the day, there was this constant discussion about treasuries, treasuries being the next bubble, that treasuries are well overdone, the 30-year, especially long end of the treasuries being so out of whack. And what you should do is invest in TBT, which is the double inverse ETF to essentially short the long ETF, long treasuries. And what would happen there, obviously, is because there's so much money moving into the treasuries because of this flight to safety of late, we've seen this ramp up of the price of treasuries, especially the long treasuries, and interest rates fall off to historic lows. And that also has been exacerbated because we saw the Fed reduce interest rates dramatically. But what I think is interesting is that we've seen a run up nicely for our clients over at TDI Managed Growth. We have about 7 points on it, so about 20% or so return on that particular ETF. I'm getting a little nervous now. You know, once, call it the contrarian to me, but every time I seem to hear about the place to be and everybody going in that direction, I get a little nervous. We heard this with the technology, if you remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and then we heard about real estate, and then we heard about all these bubbles, and the prognosticators are trying to get a lot of, you know, well in front of it this time because so many of them had missed the actual bursting of the bubble. But I think that we need to be careful with this right now, and we're adjusting our stops on TBT to ensure that we don't get slammed by some unknown event that may turn out to be lopsided. And since everybody's talking about it again, it gets me very concerned. The other thing that they were talking about was that there was one thing I told you about. There was this great amount of optimism and an interesting amount of the people that were there were not as much pessimistic as I saw that the speakers were. The speakers were unbelievably pessimistic, and I question now, and I don't know if I'm turning bullish or not, or I just want to throw this out to you as an idea. That when I see a lot of people all talking the same talk, all talking the same story, it always gets me nervous and I question what's going on. Is it really going to be that bad? Maybe. Is it going to be maybe a lot worse? Well, maybe. But maybe is there something, you know, why are we seeing this chorus, you know, in such a harmony right now? What's happening these days? What's happening right now that's causing that? And is everybody right? Everybody wrong? Where are we? But I always seem to believe that whenever I hear the consistency of the everyone, if you will, it always seems to be wrong. Have you noticed that? There's something about that you know, the wisdom of the crowds seem to be just a little off, and especially when it comes to analysts often. So anyway, I thought those two things were very interesting with regard to the conference itself. I'll also be going to New York this week. If you catch me, we'll see what happens, but I'm supposed to be on CNBC on The Money Show. I'm a featured guest, I think, on Wednesday evening. Supposedly going to be on the Jon Stewart, The Daily Show. They called me. They want me to be on talking about how we did so well in the strategy lab. We're up about 14.5%. And I guess somebody got their hands on it from the Daily Show there. So I don't know. They're going to probably beat me up pretty good and make fun of me and call me all sorts of names. And I don't know what they're going to do, but they'll probably be a bit around it. But it'll be fun. We'll see if that works out well, and I'll make sure to send a Twitter to you if you haven't signed up. It's Andrew Horowitz is the one, just one word over at Twitter, and then we'll make sure that everybody is updated with that. And on that note, I'll also mention that this is the last final week of the Strategy Lab. We'll see how we finish up here. We did put a variety of different trades a little bit far away on some. I was really starting to like, and I am starting to like the agriculturals and the fertilizers and everything related to food. I guess you just got to eat, right? I mean, you don't have to drive your car. You don't have to do many of the things in life. But in the end of the day, you do have to eat. So I think that we are getting back to our roots here and looking at some of the commodities once again. And I think also what's interesting about like a Potash, Mosaic, maybe an Archer Daniels potentially, and there's a whole host of others. What's interesting about those is that once those catch fire again, and if there is that fire that gets kind of lit underneath them, the hedge funds are going to be right back there. Those were the absolute loves of the hedgies. They love the whole baseline commodities, and they fell from heaven down to the depths of hell, didn't they, in the last few weeks and months, and they really haven't recovered. And interestingly, the question was ever, were they going to recover? Would they ever reach the level that they were? Well, I don't know if that's going to happen right now, but we do seem to like the ETF, the DBA, the DBC. We also like Mosaic and Potash, and we like some of the general ags. We have a couple of other ones. I'll put them on the show notes. And by the way, about show notes, a few of you written me and told me that it was a little difficult to find the show notes. We have put those at the top of the page of thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Just go there. The first post you see at the top will always be the latest podcast, and the notes are inside the episode information. And we're also going to put a tag called show notes there to make it really easy. So I hope that helps. Okay, what else do we have to talk about? Oh, going down my list of things here that we wanted to talk about. If you haven't caught the conversations with John Dvorak, we do something called DH Unplugged, and that also will put that link inside of here. It's kind of an open mic thing that we do. We every once in a while get together, John and I, and have a kind of a discussion about all sorts of things. Just really, there's no real focus other than the fact we focus on finance and some of the crazy things about finance. I think you'd really enjoy that. And if you haven't done so, I'll put a link on the site where you can download that and put that into your favorite podcast listening device of sorts. So with that, let's get right to the phone with Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University when we get back on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
You are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. In 3, 2, 1. And now back to the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
And back by popular demand, we have a good friend of mine, Fausto Puglisi, and he is with Cyber Trading University. And I always get emails because people are always interested in learning how to take matters in their own hand, particularly in these markets. But I think that more importantly, that people want to understand about the market. So Fausto is one of the original guys that created the day trading, you know, back when it was something that was kind of whispered and talked about in a quiet manner. And they called them the, Fausto, what did they call you back then?
The Sos Bandit.
Sos Bandit. It sounds so romantic. Anyway, thanks for...
Actually, it was a very ugly word, and people it was actually a very ugly word, and people didn't like us, so they figured... The reason I called us Sos Bandits, because the bandit was a thief, and back then we used a vehicle of day trading, which was Sos, which is a vehicle of NASDAQ, that we were able to use to buy and sell stock without being a market maker. So they kind of put those two words together.
And by the way, thank you for coming on again, because I always get so many emails about when you're on. But I want to talk about a couple of things, because it's been a while, and there's been a lot of things that have happened in the market over the last year and into 2009, as a matter of fact. And I've been getting, I think we're starting to change the tide a little bit when people are thinking about, investing in a mutual fund or investing in a blue chip or looking at, one way of doing things. And, you know, when their brokers tell them that under no circumstances don't sell because everything will come back eventually, people are waking up and saying, I think, wait, you know what? Maybe I need to start questioning some of this. And one of the things that's interesting, when you and I first met way back a number of years ago, one of the reasons I actually came to you, and that's what happened, is I went to Fausto because he had a good name in the industry. And one of the things I was doing for my clients was I wanted to make sure that I was getting best execution. That was the reason I went there. I want to make sure that when we were trading for our clients, that we were getting the best execution on every single trade, not just saying, okay, like, you know, we want a market order or just a simple limit order. But when we're dealing with these higher end trading platforms, that we know that we see all these market makers and the various secondary channels and main platforms in terms of trading, that we could actually, you know, make sure that we can get the best execution. So that's what started this whole romance and this love affair with my friend Fausto. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, when I realized as I got into your various programs that when I approach the markets and when I look at a price and we do all of our, you know, analysis of the stock, it's clearly an important part to understand when to enter or exit for that matter. And I think I use the analogy that it's like, you know, trying to cook. And when you're cooking and you go into a kitchen and you don't know where all the spices are and you don't know what the spices do and you don't know exactly what maybe some of the various pots and pans may do, how do you actually cook a good meal? Well, how do you create a portfolio and how do you invest if you don't have all the tools at your disposal? If you don't have a short, if you don't know how to, you know, do maybe scalp trading or swing trading. So, you know, what do most people come to you for, Fausto? I mean, what are they, is it they're looking to just make a few bucks? Why would people come to you in the first place?
I'll tell you, Andrew, it's been... The audience, since the last time we've done, I think the last time we did is about, 3-4 months ago, that I've been teaching now have basically almost doubled. So it seems like a lot more people are now starting to say, you know, I got to know what's going on here. I mean, after this Madoff scandal that's going on, and believe me, when that came out, I wasn't surprised. I'm like, and I said, you know what? You think this will be the first one? There's going to be a lot more coming out.
I called you that night. Didn't I call you that night when it came out?
I know.
I called you that night. I was freaking out. You were somewhere. It was late at night. And I called you, and you're like, you were somewhere. You're not at, you weren't nowhere. You
I was
just,
out to dinner. Yeah, right. I was out to dinner. I was out there with my wife.
I'm like, Fausto, you're not going to believe this. Because, you know, not many people at the time, I think, knew. It wasn't a household word, unless you maybe lived in New York or you were a trader or
no,
whatever.
But you know who he was. You knew who he was because he was a market maker. Right. It was MADF on the NASDAQ on
exactly.
the level two.
Exactly. Could you see that anymore, and, by the way? Does that show up anymore?
No.
It doesn't. I don't know.
No, I'm just saying, there
I didn't even look. I haven't even thought about that. But it doesn't show up anymore, right? Oh, boy.
No, it doesn't come up.
But you know what?
To answer your question, though, not to change subject, but to answer your question, a lot of people do come to me for several reasons. Number one, the main reasons is that, obviously, we know what's going on in today's economy. The market, people getting laid off, losing 500,000 jobs a month so far, and I personally think it's going to be a lot worse when we get probably into March. And what's happening, people start to realize, well, what do we do? I mean, could we benefit from this catastrophe? Because that's what I always say. I mean, catastrophes make opportunities, and maybe they could take matters in their own hands. They're losing in their 401ks. Like, you know, what's going on? You don't know. They don't know who to trust anymore. They don't know, and now they're starting to realize that they have to start getting a little more educated. They're starting to listen on TV a little bit more. They're starting to realize, like, well, is there another avenue out there? They're coming to guys like you and me, and listening, you know, not just being. You believe in what they're seeing on TV, but let's see what some other experts are
asking questions. Asking questions.
What's that?
Asking questions. They're asking.
Asking questions.
Kind of like
very
why?
Good.
Yeah, like saying why. I think that's great. I mean, I think it's awesome, and that's what we've been kind of trying to really make happen here. But let's get back to Madoff for a second. You know, we saw that MADF. Let's say on the so if everybody can out there envision this, right? So you have a let's call it a program, and there's a palette inside that program that shows you where the market makers are. So if the stock is trading at 25, let's say, maybe there's a bunch of people at 25 and 24.60 and 24.30 and 24.20, whatever the numbers are that are looking to buy. And the same thing on the sell side, they're looking to sell. So you have the levels, right? And the different colors, depending on what system you're
that's
on.
Right. Now, on the level two.
Level two. And it's live, and you see how much they're going to be buying something. So you could, and Fausto teaches all this, and that's not complicated. It's the traps and all the things that he talks about and the which way things are going to move and why they're doing it and making sure that there's volume and breadth and But back to Madoff for a second. So it would say MADF, right? And that would be one of the market makers. Now, what I don't understand is if there was never in the last number of years, at least, any kind of order flow going on, because that, right? I mean, with $50 billion, $20 billion, whatever the number is, there'd be some order flow, and it would probably be going through his firm, you would think. Because then
right.
Did anybody notice there was no order flow? Why didn't anybody notice that?
You know, I mean, he was one of the top guys that was paying for order flow. And I don't know if all your listeners know what payment for order flow means, because that's like the first slide that I show in my lessons. Payment for order flow, what that means is that your online broker is taking your order, and they're not even executing the stock. They're taking your order, and they're selling it to a guy like Madoff, who's paying them under the table for your order. So your online broker is just more of a middleman. That's why a lot more people is trying to get into direct access. So, that's exactly what you're saying is that, he was doing a lot of payment for order flow business. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if he probably was still doing it, I personally think what happened to him is he was probably exposed on some really big positions, and these stocks got crushed, and he tried to, hell, I mean, you had Fannie Mae at $60 last year. Where is it now? 60 cents?
Yeah, but a Madoff, theoretically, smart guy. I mean, to pull this off, he has to be smart. So let's just say for a moment, let's give for a moment, how awful this may be, the benefit that there was a time that maybe he was legit. Let's just go there for a second. And let's say that something really bad happened. But why would he let it get that bad, number one? And some of the things just don't make any sense at all. And losing all the money? And if in fact he did lose all the money, then and if in fact there was this situation like you mentioned, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, whatever it was, an AIG, again, wouldn't people notice there was no order flow going on? Now, I'll tag on one other point. I just recently got a Madoff statement sent to me. Have you seen any of these?
Yeah, I got a few of them, but which one do you have?
Well, I mean, I have the October and I have the November and the September. I have 3 months. I think the October, November, December. Or maybe maybe it wasn't December, I guess. Maybe it was the month before. But what's fascinating is it's very clear that he was making up these statements after the fact. Did you pick that up? So like the October statement, he would do like November 20th, and then he'd send it to you. Because in October, right. He was out of the market just at the right time.
Right.
In November, he went back in the market, again, according to these statements. kind of at the right time. And I also understand from someone I know that he never sent out confirms. Are you aware of that? There was never any confirmation sent out. I mean, that's interesting.
That was hysterical.
That's unbelievable, right? And then if you asked for confirms, he would say no, and they'd get very angry with you, which was really also very interesting. But the thing that really kind of...
How many mutual funds send you? Mutual funds don't do the same thing. I mean, they don't come out and... Did some mutual funds send you?
No, nobody sent... No, but here's the thing. He was organized as a hedge fund, right? Supposedly?
Right.
But wait a minute. How are individual statements going out? Hedge funds don't send out individual statements, do they? They send you out a quarterly consolidated with a total amount and your proportional value of your portfolio. So if you have Apple computers and the total portfolio is a 4% position of Apple, you'll get saying Apple computers, 4% position. But usually what they'll do is give you a total gain or loss. He was sending out monthly statements that almost look like individual brokerage account statements.
Okay.
I mean, the whole thing's spooky.
And he did it all in-house, correct?
Yeah, he did it in-house, but he clearly did it after the fact. But he had, on those statements, some glorious-looking option trades. I mean, I know they were fake, but they look great. They look really, I mean, it was pretty impressive looking, I got to tell you. And he was up in each of those months, but he didn't do it in such a way that looked like he was really creating them after the fact. He did it so he lost a little bit of money here, lost a little bit of money there. But it's terrible, and I feel really very sorry for anybody. I mean, it's really one of the most awful things I've ever seen from so many different standpoints, from charity, from individuals, from companies. I just wonder how much more dirt is going to keep on churning up, because it seems like there was somebody else in New York recently, wasn't there?
Yeah, this guy named Cosmo.
Cosmo, yeah, yeah.
Not too far, you know, and I know a lot of people, I know some personal friends of mine, really close friends of mine, you know, hardworking school teachers that lost a lot of money with him also. You know what it is? Listen, you know, Andrew, the bottom line is this. You can't trust anybody out there other than yourself, and that's why what I do has been very successful now, because a lot of people say, you know what, why am I giving to somebody? I'll just do it myself.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. And that's why it's starting, you know, that's why it's important for you to get educated. But not even like, not to say you can't trust anybody, you know what I mean? I mean, I trust you very well, Andrew, and what you do, but as an investor, you should at least be educated and know what's going on.
The thing would happen faster, and here's the thing. I mean, you shouldn't trust me. I'll be honest with you. You shouldn't trust me. You shouldn't trust anybody just blindly. And the thing that went on there was that he was his own broker-dealer, he was his own clearing, and he was his own investment advisor. There was no wall between him and the money. The difference for us, for example, is where we have like a, you know, Interactive Brokers or Schwab or whoever else we're using. We have a wall. They have the money for the client. And I guess more so that this whole issue has really raised the idea that back to the point of the questions have to be asked, and oftentimes nobody's going to care for your money as much as you are. I don't think so, at least. I mean, you know,
No one does.
Yeah,
you're right.
So anyway, let's kind of take Madoff aside, because I want to ask you a couple of questions about trading. So this year, let's kind of leave 2008 aside for a second, because 2009 hasn't been so great for the markets either. But is there any change in the trading patterns, or are you finding still there are a lot of opportunities out there that you can grab? You could really grab some opportunities in trading, and also, what's the story with? I mean, how are you trading? I mean, what are you looking for? What is it that your kind of your goals are this year, if they've changed? And that's a lot of things at once. So let's just start with first things. 2009. What's going on with trading, and what have your students been doing, and what have you been teaching?
Well, trading was since we spoke last time has been phenomenal. The volatility has been off the charts. I would say from going back to the past week and a half of the, the middle of February till now, things start slowing down a little bit, so it's been kind of choppy. Hasn't been that much going on, but the most, what we've just been doing is just looking what's going on in the market and just trading the market. Nothing really has changed. I mean, what we just look at is if the market's trending down, short. If the market's going up, go long.
That seems way too logical. And too easy.
But you know what?
It's
ridiculous, but that's how simple it is, Andrew, and I just can't figure it out. Everybody's trying to figure out to find the next Microsoft out there. There's no such thing. I mean, with everything that's going on with the economy, you just got to trade what's going on and go from there. I mean, now we're having this, obviously we won't get into a debate about it, but now you have the stimulus package coming in. You know what? If they pass it, you know, it's one thing. If they don't pass it, you know, let me tell you, it's going to be a great opportunity to make money. You know, in a way of trading the market,
right.
you just got to give what the market gives you and trade it. But what we'll do is we'll go through a top 20 list. We'll default by percentage gainers and losers, and we'll just see what's going on in those stocks, like the financials. I mean, they were hot about a week ago, then they went sour, they were flat, now they're hot again. You know, you can't constantly trading them every day because you're always going to find something new.
But you will trade the financials. So the thing is, and I know, and if you haven't heard Fausto before, and you haven't heard me say this, I think this is kind of interesting. Fausto, he has a rule, and one of the first things he learned in one of his first classes, because he plasters it to your forehead, is you will not hold overnight. And you got to like kind of, I think it's a blood oath that you have to give Fausto.
Actually, it's the name of that book that's coming out.
Oh, really?
Overnights.
Well, no overnights is the point, right? I mean, you haven't changed that, have you?
It's on every lesson planner.
Yeah, do not hold overnight, no matter how bad it may be. Like, you know, let me give you the example, I think. So you have a stock that you bought and, you know, $10,000 you invested and you're down 10%, so $1,000. Well, you know, sometimes in trading, like, well, you know, I think I'll get better tomorrow, right? But unfortunately, tomorrow ends up being a worse day, and then you end up getting into yourself into a giant hole, which you never get out of. So his idea is, you know, do not hold the night. You are dealing with a day-to-day situation. The trading hours are the trading hours. Once you're finished, you're done. And I think that probably saves people a lot of money. But so with that in mind—
The ones that listen.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's always going to be somebody trying to do their own thing and breaking the rules. And that's the whole—by the way, that's the really good thing also about what you do is the rules that you have, I think that— Oftentimes, breaking the rules and the disciplines and going against, you know, like saying that we're not going to sell it ever or not going to change our pricing targets are probably the things that I can remember that got us in the worst trouble ever when investing. You know, whereas you say, okay, that stock that we have, we like it here and for this reason, and you hold the stock and then it dips below what your sell point is. And so, you know what? I'll nudge it down a little bit because I really like this stock. That's trouble, right?
It's one of the cardinal rules.
Yeah. What about buying down or averaging down? What do you think about that?
Oh my God, that's the second one that you don't do.
Oh, okay. that wasn't set up.
That's the biggest sucker bet in the world. That has been invented by stockbrokers to make their clients just feel a little bit more comfortable that if a broker got them into a bad position, you know, they're trained to call them up and you know make them buy more so they can one they can make more commission or number two make them feel confident that it's. They still believe in the stock. It's just that's the biggest sucker bet. I just wrote an article in Equities Magazine about it. You know, averaging down is a sucker's bet. And it's why would you want to do that? You know, you could always buy it back. Just sell it and buy it back.
Yeah.
You could buy it back cheaper. What, to buy more? And what happens if it doesn't work in your favor? You're going to get really screwed. The only ones that would ever average down that I've noticed that have ever worked for, if you have very, very deep pockets and you can afford to lose all of it tomorrow and 99% of the people that are listening right now can't afford to do that.
Well, I don't even want to get into why somebody want to do that. But what I've also found is I think William O'Neill from Investors Business Daily, he talks about the same thing, that you want to, you know, get a certain price. He has a 7 or 8% downside risk. And he always talks about that you don't want to do it. In fact, you do the opposite. He's a more of a long-term buy and hold fundamental and technical analysis guy. But, you know, what he says is when the stock is trending up, you add to it. You continue to build your winning portfolio and you cut your losers, which if you think for a second, that makes a lot of sense, but that's not really what I don't think that's really what happens with a lot of people when they're looking at, I don't know, that's what I think would happen to a lot of people saying, you know what, if it's lower, it's a better price. You know, the old, well, if you liked it at 25, I love it at 20.
You gotta be going gaga at 20.
Yeah, exactly.
or 5.
Right, yeah, right. So, it's a pretty scary thing to consider putting your money up and trading it because we've all been taught that trading is a big no-no. Do you think, and I'm probably asking a question I know the answer to, but do you think that these days people are, try to convince me how trading, the idea of trading, particularly day trading, is safer than buying a stock and let's just say holding it for 2 weeks?
Well, number one, do you feel comfortable holding all that money overnight and think it's going to and be there tomorrow morning? Because I had nightmares, and obviously you can't sleep at night. You know, it's too stressful. It's not worth it. You can always buy it back. Number two, most people here just want to make a day's pay. That's it. They're losing their jobs. Why even bother even trying to, making 2% or 3%? I mean, you're just trying to make your day's pay. I just personally would just day trading is a lot less riskier because You don't know what could happen tomorrow. I mean, look what happened with Citibank. Look what happened with Bank of America. Look what happened with Bear Stearns and I mean, the General Motors, a company that would never even think of it, that would ever be in this catastrophe. And it's funny because if you held it in 2 weeks, it look what happened with AIG. In less than a week, it went from, what, 15 to all the way down to $1.50.
Yeah, that was not nice. That wasn't fun.
But that's what happens. And people start trying to, you know, get involved in a falling knife situation and just don't know, just want to cut your losses and move on. I'm just the type of guy that, you know, I know what I need to make a year, and that's what I want to make a year. I try not to be over-killing and or make less of it, and I just try to be very consistent. And, you know, listen, if the market rallies today, I don't have any open positions, you know, I'm not going to cry over spilt milk. But you know what? If I didn't take a loss and I says, well, maybe I'll come back tomorrow and so on, believe me, that stock could destroy me.
Right.
You know?
Most people that are out of work that you're saying, this is kind of interesting because if you're out of work, you could actually find yourself a job doing this. But I think it would be kind of reckless for a moment to assume that you're going to use all your money and do this. But I have a question. You're out of work and you don't have any income right now. And let's say just for the moment you don't have the prospect of having income. Who in their right mind is going to put up their stash, their money, and trade it and potentially lose a chunk of money? I mean, I don't really understand why that's a smart thing to do.
It's not the smart thing to do, and that's why, you know, what I do, Andrew, and what I teach, you don't need a lot of money to trade. That's the problem. That's what people don't realize. We're not talking about, 2000 and the .com when everything was in triple digits. You're talking, I mean, think about it right now. To buy 1,000 shares of Citigroup right now, because we know the financials have been hot. Average price is around $3, okay? $3 on 1,000 shares is $3,000, all right? The stock is moving maybe 50, 70 cents a day. If you pull out 20 cents, forget about pulling the whole thing, just 20 cents out of that stock, which I know everybody here right now could totally agree that pulling 20 cents out of any stock in the market's a joke. I mean, that doesn't sound too hard to do. We see stocks move dollars. 20 cents is 200 a day. That's 48,000 at the end of the year. Okay? Hmm. That's what I teach. So, do you need a lot of money to do it? No. Do you think you want to take all take your life savings and put it into it? Absolutely not, because it's not for everybody. Not everybody's successful, but you know, with the proper education and just making sure if it's for you or not, at least you could try it. I mean, it might work. And let me tell you, if you could really master it, like I've trained a lot of people over the years, if you have the passion and enjoy what you do, I could swear by this, the best job in the world. You are your own boss. You can come whenever you please. Just got to be patient, and you know, like you just said, you don't put all your eggs in one basket.
How do you learn not to lose? In other words,
you gotta lose.
Of course, you'll lose. That I understand. That I understand. Of course, you lose. But how do you get yourself situated in a way that you can be. I mean, doing this in a time when you don't have, I'm just having this real difficulty of understanding how someone could, you know, unless you tell me that you're teaching this, you know, risk management on the downside, are you going through this? Is that something I know that I've done the course, it was a long time ago, but is that something you're teaching, the whole downside risk? Because people could get really, I mean, in anything they could do, they can get really hurt. Just being in the market, not being in the market. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying to you is if they're doing this, how do they protect themselves?
Money management. I mean, you have to learn money management tools. And that is one of the, that is a whole lesson that I teach within itself. When you go into the market and you're losing, this is what I specifically more or less teach in anything. Before you make money in a stock, you're already losing. Commission and spread. So you always want to analyze the stock before you ever buy the stock. Specifically me as a trader, what I teach my students, you didn't make a single penny until you sold it. As soon as you buy it, it's already a loss.
Right.
So you have to look at it that if you're wrong, how much is the loss going to be? Because you're not going to win on every trade. A baseball player bats 300. He strikes out 700% of the time. You know, so you are going to lose in this market. And so you have to make sure I teach you know how to minimize your losses because you're not going to win on every trade. And if you're wrong, it's going to be a very small amount, you know, but it won't be a lot to make, but also be a very minimal that you can afford to take.
Well,
what's happening?
I was going to say that the thing is that I guess the real important issue here is that people, whoever is going to do this, and I know I'm going to squeeze you right now to give your free course, but because you did that last time, people love it. But So everybody get ready because we're going to find out how to do that. So when someone's learning how to do this, might I say that probably they don't implement doing this without getting the full, well, whatever the education they need is? Is that a good, I mean, not take it lightly, like kind of get a couple of ideas and then just do it and then run away from it, because there's a lot to this, and if you just do partially, you can get hurt?
You know, it's so easy said and done, but some people don't realize that. They think ignorance is expensive, you know, education is expensive, try ignorance. And I totally agree, and it's just, and it's amazing, but you need someone to show you how to do it the right way. And what's happening, a lot of people try to do it on their own and think it's easy. And believe me, trading is easy. You have all, with today's technology and the internet, and now you have access to direct access, anybody can do it. And it says, let me try it out. And everybody's impatient. They want to make it yesterday. And they don't realize that when they go out there and try it, the worst thing that could happen to them in the beginning, Andrew, is that they make money. The worst thing that can happen.
Then they get a full head of steam, and they think they're invincible. Is that why?
Yeah, and then what happens, they're like, this is easy. Let me trade more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just trained a student about 3 months ago. He flew me to his house. He ended up taking my class. Within his first 2 weeks, he made like $72,000.
Wow.
And I'm like, first of all, scratch my head. How did this guy do that? And I was looking at his reports. He was trading like 10,000 shares. I mean, he had a lot of money. He was a very wealthy individual, but then he lost 150 within the next week.
Ouch.
And that's when he knew that this was gambling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, so we're doing it with rules. This is the search I've been on for a while. I'm getting close to the answer, I think. But 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock, let's even say 2 o'clock, 2:33, and then to 4 o'clock in the afternoon with this extraordinary level of volume and this crazy market movement. What the heck is going on?
What's going on
you've noticed there's something weird going on, right?
Oh, no, I told you this before when we were talking about in the beginning. A lot of mutual funds and hedge funds managers, they're in like 50% cash, 50% stock, and, you know, they've been trading the market and day trading themselves. I mean, because they got to do something to make money.
Yeah, but the volume is extraordinary the last hour, and we get these incredible spikes almost every single day up in the last hour. I mean, maybe we don't finish up, but we get this at 2 o'clock, we get this weird movement in the market almost on the button at 2 o'clock. What is going on?
Well, it's funny you say that, but on my website I sell something called a cyber clock, and a lot of people like to buy it, and it talks about those times. What happens is between 11 and 2:30, that's lunchtime, so things are really quiet around that time. What happens when people start coming back, the time that you're saying around that 2:30, from 2:30 to 3, you get some really big volatility because the bond market closes at 3 o'clock. So there's a lot of action going within that half hour. And then what happens, and then things really get shaky between 3 and 3:30 Eastern time. And then that last half hour is when you get that next wave of a rally, if it's a big trend up or trend down.
Let me interrupt you. So what you're telling me is that the market has reduced volume and volatility because people are eating lunch between 11:30 and 2:30. I just want to repeat that point.
That's what you're telling me.
They go into meetings, people aren't trading, and it's all because we have to eat. I mean, I'm just making sure I'm clear about this.
Someone's got to eat lunch.
I'm just saying, it sounds like the oddest thing I've ever heard.
But it's common sense, though. I mean, think about it. It's like at the beginning when the market opens up at 9:30. Why is it the busiest, most volatile time? Because
clearly everybody's back from breakfast, I guess, right?
From 8:30 to 9, but from 9:30, I mean, believe me, I got my machine gun out there ready to fire whatever looks hot.
Right.
So
now, but what happens between 3 and 4? Why is it such an extraordinary? I mean, we've seen you have a day that's down, I don't know, I'm picking a number, you know, down 200 points. You have a day that's, oftentimes this is what you see, as I see it. You have a day that's up 150 in the morning, right? It goes down midday and then spikes back up at the end of the day. Or the reverse is true. You have a big down day. Afternoon comes around, it kind of picks up a little bit, and then it may pop it down at the end of the day. Now, the explanation that I'm understanding is something has to do with the fact that maybe the ETFs are getting their last-minute orders at the 3:30 to 4 o'clock time. They have a requirement to have the last orders in to Goldman, to Morgan, or whoever else is doing it. The ETFs have to have balance their books, or I should say mark their books correctly and get whatever funding they need and any stocks they need inside of there. But more so, there's a discussion that I guess – that's a big issue right there. But also, are you telling me mutual funds are somehow doing something end of day? Are they positioning themselves as well?
They, listen, none of them do not want to hold overnight positions. And I remember about a month ago, I don't know the exact date, but I'll give it to you. I remember the last 5 minutes of 10 minutes of the market closed, I saw the Dow rallied and crashed about 300 points within 10 minutes of the close. So, I mean, what's happening is a lot of people just do not want to hold positions overnight. So they're just trading the market over the course of the day.
So they're covering their shorts, or they're going long?
Or covering their longs.
And they're doing that at the end of the day. Now, don't people that are quote-unquote smart in this, the mutual fund managers and all these, don't they know that they should be getting out earlier so that maybe, is that why the 2:30 starts, clicking up? Because 2:30 is where your window is a little cleaner before 3 o'clock, which is kind of that last hour thing?
It's like a horse race. Like a horse race. You know, you come out of the gate, you fire it out. Now you're pacing yourself in the middle around the track. Now you come into the last pole to the finish line, and you know what? You think you got a runner there, so you want to trade it because the most volatility is going to start within that last half hour of the close. So you just and it's funny because you're a professional trader, you could just trade that first hour and the last hour. So even though the mutual funds, like you say, well, should they get around 2:30? No, because they're trading the market over the course of the day, and the way the market goes up and down is due to supply and demand. So they don't have any control of it, and usually that supply and demand happens into the close, and people are trying to squeeze as much money as they can out of a stock, and nobody knows what everybody's going to do other than until, the last 15 minutes of the close. You can go in there, it's like playing poker. You could sit there and we could pace ourselves. Now it's just you and me left going right into the last card,
But this didn't always go on, Fausto.
The stakes get high.
This didn't always go on. This was not what always happened. This is a phenomenon.
No, it never did.
This happened starting, let's call it, let's just say October. Let's just say, I'll go back to the summer of, it probably wasn't even that far, but September of 08, let's just say that. It's been absurd. It's been absolutely, you say, a horse race, it's horse manure. It's not, the problem is the stress level with it. Because they could, we've seen a few days that have been out of control on the upside in the last hour or so. But this kind of crazy market, it seems like it's a sucker punch. Like they're sucking you in only to drag the carpet out from under you. That's what it seems to me like. Over time they're doing that. They're rocking it up. They're moving it. I think there's also, this is my speculation here, and we'll end on this, but I think that there's something to do with some of the ETFs and some kind of an aberration or an understanding about how the futures close, and there may be some kind of a benefit. If we know that the days are going to be a certain way, that they can settle themselves prior to the fact that the ETFs are going to do whatever they're going to do, and maybe some of these groups are maybe, I don't know, they're setting themselves up so they know they can trade into that whole transaction. That's my theory. But what?
It could be so much. And the bottom line, I just think what it is, it's just people just trading the market over the course of the day, and it's only going to get more volatile. So whatever it is, just look at the bright side. As me as a trader, that's an opportunity, because for me to make money in this market, if I don't have those great swings in there, I'm not going to make any money, and none of my students are going to make any money. We need that volatility to benefit from it.
So you give away some free courses so people can kind of check it out. What's really cool about Fausto's free courses is you have like a window right into his computer. So he uses like a WebEx technology, which you think of. I know it's something new you're using, but there's some technology where basically you log in the morning and you watch him trade. I said this before. The first time I saw him doing it, I was like, oh, my God, he's live. He's trading. He's talking to us. I'm like, Sell that thing. I don't want it to lose money. It was kind of weird. But he trades live right in front of you. It's really cool. He tells you what you're doing, why you're doing it, and he'll show you how to make money, you'll lose money, whatever happens on the trade, and explains it all to you. I think it's really cool. So when's your next – do you have a free class coming up?
Yes, I do. I have another free class if everybody wants to join in. The next one is coming up on February 11th, and it's a two-day course. You have to be there for 2 days. So it runs about an hour and a half a day. And what's nice about it, it comes with a nice lesson planner. I even quiz you and test you on it. Listen, my old thing is, and that's why Andrew really likes having me on here, is because, first you got to learn before you can earn, and make sure if this is what you want to do. And I believe that I have people that learn more in this class than they've taken pay classes with other people. And not only that, but I'm probably one of the only people out there in the industry will trade live in the market when I teach. I could show a nice, beautiful picture, a nice lesson planner, but I'll go out there and I'll show you and I'll interact with you and show you how to trade these markets. And like I said, just visit our website at cybertradinguniversity.com or just go to ctucorp.com. Right in the left-hand corner on the top of our website, just click on free trading course. Just click on it, fill out the registration form, and we'll get you the log on instructions and we'll get you signed up for it. But it's definitely the smartest thing you can do. I mean, put the time away. The class is also recorded, so you can go back and review it if you need to. And it's convenient for all
Great.
Of us.
Great. So people can do that. And February 11th to 12th, free course over at Cyber Trading University. You can click on our site. We'll put a note in the show notes for this particular podcast. We'll say free course. And go get that free course, and I think you'd really enjoy it. If nothing else, it's pretty entertaining, if nothing else. So, Fausto, good luck. I know that you have another child on the way very soon, so my best wishes to you and yours, and I'm looking forward to...
Next time we talk, I'll tell you what it is.
What it is. That was good. We don't have any thoughts on what it is. It is at this point.
It is.
But
you know what's funny? I went to the doctor's office, and my wife dying to know what it is, and you know, I just don't want it. I'm very old-fashioned, and it's funny, but... 90% of the people out there know what they're having, and I'm like only 10% of the people. I'm like, you know what? It takes the excitement out of it, Andrew. I'm like, I got the next 50 years to spend and lose all my money with this child.
Yeah, no, that you have what you have there in the world. You have a bad trade. That's what that is. That's a bad trade.
And that's a long-term
It's a costly trade, my friend. It's beautiful as they may be. It's a beautiful thing, but it's a costly investment. But I have three myself, and it's wonderful. The one thing you'll know about three versus two. Three versus two, kids, it's not 2 + 2 = 4. It's like 12. You no longer sit at a table for four. The car is cramped all the time. It makes a whole different life. Good luck to you, my friend. Good luck.
Well, I think I'll stop at three because I know most cars are designed for five people.
Yeah.
Because I'm not breaking down and getting a caravan.
Good for you. So February 11th and 12th is the free course, and thanks so much for that. We'll get that free course. Anybody can check that out. Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University. Thank you so much for joining us on the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
Thanks for having me again, Andrew.
All right, I'll see you soon, buddy. And that's a wrap, and we're going to call it quits here. Thanks for joining me on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Next week, we're going to bring you some more interesting things related to this economy, and I have a special song, a parody that we put together for you that I think you're going to enjoy. But Mark Faber is going to be here, one of the gents who seemed to be one of the guys who called it a long time ago the problems we're going to have in the global economy. He's calling in. We're going to get him in Hong Kong and have a discussion with him. So stick around. If you have any questions, of course, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and be sure to check out the free course. There's a link in there so you can get the free course. I encourage you to do so. It's a lot of fun. It really is. And aside from that, if you want some more information, I think I mentioned last week, international investors are now welcome in the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. So we have that free trial going on, all sorts of things happening right now to really make sure that you get the best investment choices, decisions, opportunities that you can in this crazy market as we see it here. Thanks a lot for joining me again. This is Andrew Horowitz. Be safe. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.